sports news that we'll go over. Some, I don't know, interesting things that happened this past week. The first bit of interesting news, this has been a storyline all throughout the last week, was the NBA is going to be moving the All-Star game from Charlotte, North Carolina. And mainly it's due to the fact that, you know, the, what are they calling it, the bathroom bill or whatever like that, that North Carolina passed, and the NBA doesn't approve of that. And there's a lot of people that don't approve, and it's a very controversial subject. But the NBA just basically, I don't kind of want to enforce their, enforce is probably the bad word, but, you know, they don't want to support that, because, I mean, having an All-Star game in a city is a big deal. You know, some of the stats that are coming out is that Charlotte's going to be out around $100 million.
Whew!
And so that kind of exposure for a city, stuff like that, it's quite the punishment. You know, the NBA is saying, we don't agree with, you know, what you're doing, and so they're, you know, kind of laying down their law in their own way.
It's interesting. I feel like the NBA is one of the sport groups that does that a lot. I mean, because your other news that you have is Michael Jordan, right? Like, I feel like the NBA just seems to be more socially. I think they talked about that on Aggie Morning Word this morning as well. That they seem to be more active when it comes to like social issues than others. So,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, that is something that I noticed, because I mean, you go back a few years and you have Donald Sterling, and he had those racist comments he made that were recorded, and they came down hard on him. And it's just the NBA, you know, whether you like it or not, they're trying to support what they view to be right. And I think in theory they're good things, you know, they don't want racism, they don't want discrimination. And so, you know, and you can be on either side of the coin, and, you know, whether or not they should be doing it, you know, ethics and things like that. But, I mean, they are doing it. And, like I said, even the players are getting into it. Carmelo Anthony's getting into it. Michael Jordan just came out with, you know, a statement, which I actually liked. You know, just saying, can everybody just kind of stop? You know, because I really like that he came up. He's saying both sides need to get together and work things out. He wasn't just saying, oh, police need to stop shooting black people.
Right.
Or whatnot. He came out and said both sides need to really work something out. And he donated money to really both sides.
And you know, the NBA is not the only one that is responding to North Carolina. There's been other businesses or groups that have done a similar thing. I think it was PayPal that decided, hey, we're not going to put our headquarters or not one of our main places in the city as well. So, interesting, you know, interesting culture that dealing with right now that even affects sports, right?
Yeah, it does. And people are throwing around different places that might get the NBA All-Star game. New Orleans seems to be the front runner, which I'm not sure how much I like that, because they've had it like twice in the past 8 years or so. They had it in like 2008, 2014. So it's like Utah hasn't had it in forever. Come on, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the All-Star game, I think it was last year, was in like 92 or something like that.
Yeah. Forever ago. That was back in the Dream Team days.
That was fantastic. I had a good time down there in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get it back here in the West, in the mountains.
Instead of having it in the same place every year.
Yeah.
All right, but speaking of the Dream Team, Team USA is going through some exhibition games in preparation for the Olympics, and they played two games last week. They played Argentina and China. And really, they blew them both out. Like, it wasn't even close. Like, in Argentina, it was 111-74. Against China, it was 106-57. And, I don't know, it's kind of disappointing because, I mean, I obviously like seeing Team USA do good. And you obviously know that they will, because there's really no doubt in anyone's mind that the United States is the best basketball country. Although, I mean, the roster, I mean, it could be better, because, like, you had the Dream Team days where you literally put together the best team, the best players.
Yeah.
Which, most of which were the best players at their position for all time, which is remarkable. But, I mean, this Team USA, it's full of all-stars, like it usually is. I mean, you look through the roster, you got guys like, you know, Kevin Durant's really the best player on the team. We've also got Carmelo Anthony, who's usually always on Team USA. Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, DeMarcus Cousins, DeAndre Jordan. So obviously, you're not lacking in talent. But of course, you wish it would be a little better. But in the end, Team USA has a 15-man NBA roster, and they're playing against teams that at best have, you know, like, who are the best countries?
Like, yeah, I mean, you can have, like, two or three NBA players.
Yeah, cause I think Spain has been good, because I think the Mark and Pau Gasol are from Spain, aren't they?
Yep.
And so they're usually one of the better ones, and they've got a couple other guys. But overall, like I said, two or three NBA players versus 15.
Yeah, it's
15 All-Stars.
And I think even on top of that is the coaching staff, right? I mean,
yeah.
You have one of the most iconic coaches of all time in Coach K.
Yeah.
Versus these guys that, you know, you don't even know who they are.
Yeah,
like, they're can you name one international coach?
Like, a few years ago I could when the Jazz were going after one, but
yeah,
not anymore.
Yeah, it's just, I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting because I feel like coaches in the NBA have mattered a lot less as far as in the NBA.
Yeah.
But I think on the international scene that I do think that having guys like Coach K in charge does give Team USA a much bigger advantage as well.
Yeah.
Despite having a all NBA roster, right?
Yeah, definitely. I wonder if they should put Greg Popovich on Team USA.
Yeah.
Imagine
maybe they could. Let him play.
Yeah. Maybe he's just a 9-year-old man, doesn't want to coach the team. But I don't know. I think
in a recent interview after those exhibition games, they asked Coach K about the challenges that they might, and how he's just trying up different lineups. But I think the focus this year that they're going to have is defense, which is interesting. He said that this is probably one of the most defense-oriented teams he's coached in the Olympics. So
that sounds better when you think of the roster.
Yeah, yeah.
The different guys they got on there. Yeah. But still, it's basically like the NBA All-Star game where, like, they're just out there having fun. Only it's kind of serious basketball.
Yeah.
They're actually sort of trying. But anyway, so the next bit of news comes from the NFL. Le'Veon Bell is getting a 4-game suspension for, I don't know, the violating the league's substance abuse policy or whatever. So he's getting a similar suspension to Tom Brady. But the Steelers, they have another player, Martavis Bryant, who's going to miss the whole season for substance abuse violation. And so this is something that could really hurt the Steelers because they're, you know, the Patriots are in a situation where they're losing Tom Brady. They're losing their best player for 4 games. But everyone seems on the consensus they'll recover from it. They're in the AFC East, which isn't the greatest division. And they're going to come out, be 2-seed, even 1-seed, possibly, you know, mm-hmm. still be AFC favorites. But the Steelers, this could severely impact their season where they're in a really tough AFC North division. And, you know, they've got the Bengals, mm-hmm. the Ravens, the Browns aren't really going to be in contention, but still, that's two other great teams you have to compete with. And to be losing your best running back, who, you know, back 2 seasons ago, because last season he was, like, injured,
mm-hmm.
He had, like, 1,200 rushing yards and, like, 800 receiving yards, which is absolutely crazy, the kind of dual-threat running back that they had.
Yep.
And to be losing that for 4 games, in those 4 games they're playing... they're playing at Washington. They're going to play against Cincinnati, so they got a division game against probably the favorite of the division. And then they're playing at Philadelphia and against Kansas City.
Huh.
And if you look at losing Bryant for the entire season, you know, this division is going to come down to 1 or 2 games most likely.
Usually does.
Yeah. And you think the suspension of Le'Veon Bell and Bryant could be the difference of those 1 or 2 games for, you know, it's just, it could affect their entire season. It could swing them having home field advantage in the first round. Cause, I mean, obviously they can still make the playoffs and be wild card, but instead of playing at home for the first game, they have to play away. And like for the Patriots last season, the fact they didn't get home field advantage probably cost them a spot in the Super Bowl. And so it's a big deal.
So didn't Pittsburgh pick up D'Angelo Williams?
Yeah, they did pick up D'Angelo Williams, so... I mean, I haven't paid attention how well he's done lately.
Yeah, I think he's about 32 years old now, which is definitely...
That's like ancient for
a running back, yeah. But I believe that, you know, he was averaging about 4 yards carry or so.
Yeah, so he'll do decently.
Yeah, it's no Bell though.
Yeah, it's not the same.
And I think that luckily, you pointed out Cincinnati, and I think maybe Kansas City. What was the other two games they had? Philadelphia and
Washington and Philadelphia.
All right, so if you're gonna miss four games, those might be the best stretch. Yeah, there.
It's mainly the Cincinnati game that really is gonna have the most impact, because the other three are definitely winnable. Because they still have Ben Roethlisberger and they still have Antonio Bryant, so they could go 3-1, 4-0 possibly.
Yeah. But it you know, what's interesting is that for a similar violation, I guess that there's so different amounts of suspension.
Yeah, you wonder.
I don't know. I wonder if.
Well, hey, Le'Veon Bell had like 2,000 total rushing yards.
Yeah, he's important for the league, so yeah. I guess Roger Goodell's taking it easy on him. Yeah.
Yeah.
He helps with fantasy stats.
He's a fantasy monster that year, I'm sure. I mean, Martavis Bryant, he had like 50 catches for 765 yards, so. And that was like the number two slot for them. Although number one was like 1,800 yards for Antonio Bryant, so. Still. They'll do good, but again, this could
impact their season. Yeah,
drastically down the road in the playoffs if they drop one of these games, possibly because they don't have their best players. But Le'Veon Bell, one thing before we move on, he did say on Instagram, quote, "I'm not going to miss any games, trust me." I guess he believes the suspension's going to get overturned. But I don't know, I kind of doubt that. They typically don't overturn suspensions.
I've never seen an athlete say, "Hey, yeah, I can't wait to miss four games," on social media. So
that is true. I mean, Tom Brady fought practically to the death over his suspension. But I don't think Le'Veon Bell's going to take it that far.
Yeah.
But anyway, so again, speaking of running backs, I mean...
Speaking of running backs...
So, it's not really any secret that running back has become devalued, you might say, in the NFL. I mean, I've got half a page of different things that kind of show, you know, why running back is being less valued. I mean, in 2013, there were no running backs selected in the first round, which broke a 49-year streak. Mm-hmm. And that happened again in 2014. Something that hadn't happened in 49 years happened 2 years in a row. And, you know, another thing is that last year only 7 players rushed for 1,000 yards, and that was the lowest mark in... I mean, I looked back all the way to 2000, and I stopped there, but it was the lowest mark by, like, 6. The next lowest was 13. And so it's like, holy cow.
Yeah.
Players aren't running. Well, and the amount of rushing yards isn't that much lower.
Total, like
the total league. I mean, it has gone down slightly. Like last year was pretty low, but overall, teams are rushing for the same amount of yards.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they're not using one running back.
Hmm. Well, yeah, like you said, it's no secret that the league has definitely become pass oriented, and quarterback based. I think it was probably the first time since you said in those years, you know, we had Ezekiel Elliott going fourth this year, right? But then the next back was well into the, I think, 40th pick or so?
It was like the 41st pick, I think. I looked at it. It was like the 14th pick in the second round. So it was back there.
So teams definitely are not emphasizing them in the draft. And as you stated out, they're not relying on like a one workhorse back. You still have the few, like we talked about. Le'Veon Bell kind of was that for a while.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that the Vikings in the playoffs, when it came down to we got to win and we got to catch up, they pulled Adrian Peterson, who should be, you know, seen as this great of offensive threat, right?
Yeah.
But they're taking him off the field because they're throwing the ball, right?
Yeah, you got to put a running back in who's going to be a...
So they're putting in Asiata and McKinnon and those guys. So yeah. I think it's no secret, you know, that running back position, I think it's still important.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's important to have good backs, but it's no longer the year of the running back, you know. It's no longer, like, just one guy.
Yeah. And so I think there's a few people that are hoping that it comes back. I do hope that it comes back because I like to see guys like Adrian Peterson, where I feel like he's the last of the dying breed of great running backs, you know, where he's had a career of good performance running the ball, where I can't really think of anybody else in the league now. I mean, Marshawn Lynch retired, and he was kind of in that category where they rush for 1,000 yards a lot for most of their season, or their career, excuse me. You know, I can't really think of anybody else who's done that. All the other running backs seem to do it for like 1, maybe 2 years, fall off the map, maybe come back and do it again. I think of guys like Doug Martin, and, you know, Chris Johnson had that one really good year. Crazy year.
And then disappeared.
Yeah, disappeared. And I thought that's what's happening is these running backs are coming onto the scene and they disappear just as quickly. And
they have breakout years or seasons, and then...
I mean, you think of Alfred Morris. He had that great season in the beginning of his career, and then he's slowly gone downhill every year. He's had fewer and fewer yards.
And you guys like Arian Foster, who the Dolphins just picked up.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like they're on definitely the downslope of the career path.
And so, I wonder, so in last year there were actually two running backs picked in the first round, and like I said, this year there was a top five draft pick. So you wonder, could there be a bit of a resurgence for good running backs, feature running backs?
Yeah, I think it's a situational position. I think that's what's happening to running backs now, is that they're becoming situational with the focus on passing. People are more willing to go out and spend the money on a tier quarterback, right? And they're more willing to spend the money to protect that guy with an offensive line. And they're more willing to get a breakout receiver because the dividends pay off in the long run. It's kind of funny. There's a lot of websites out there that kind of geek out on stats. It's mostly fantasy-based, but you get like a lot of these statisticians. But there's one that I was reading kind of as we were talking about this. They're called Number Fire. But they did this. They have this thing they call net expected points. And this is why I think the emphasis in running back has gone down so much, is that it's just a matter of payoff in the end. Is that anyway, the way they figure this out has a lot of math and all that kind of thing that we don't need to worry about today. But essentially it's the impact that an offensive player has on his team as far as scoring, right? So if you're a receiver who catches a 3rd-and-10 pass and gets the first down, as opposed to a running back who's only running for 4 yards a carry or whatever. Anyway, that variable or indicator that they created, the NEP they call it, has continually been going down. And what's interesting is that it includes rushing yards from quarterbacks, which I think is actually where the league is starting to focus more on, is your versatile ability to run quarterback. But you know, it wasn't that long ago that you had teams running things like the Wildcat, right? Where they were snapping it straight to the guy and taking the quarterback off the field. And it's interesting how quickly it has shifted. I don't think you'll see a whole lot of teams like the Dolphins did that as their offense for a long time. And I don't think we will see it again, to be honest with you. I think that defenses, there's going to be a big focus on linebackers, I think, for the next little while, but I don't think running backs are going to be a big thing again. I just don't. I think it's going to be a team. You're still going to go after those breakaway guys like your Gurleys and your Elliotts and them, but in the long run, they don't pay off, and so I don't think the league is going to show them the money, per se.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's just going to not become an important thing for them. I don't know. I don't think it's coming back.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with you as much as I'd like to see good running backs. And it's interesting what you said about them getting paid, because I looked up kind of the salary comparison. I actually compared them to wide receivers. And there's like Adrian Peterson is the only running back making more than $10 million. He makes like $14 million a year. And the next one is, I forget who it is, he makes $8 million. And the wide receivers, there's like 13 of them who make more than $10 million. And so like, so that you get more payout from the big wide receivers, and you just score more points.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't what you said, because I was reading an article about this, about the running backs. The teams that had 1,000-yard rushers, only one of them made the playoffs, and that was the Vikings. The rest of them were basically on losing teams. So it's like, you got to be able to, you know, throw the ball, and the run kind of supplements that. And I think if there is any sort of, you know, resurgence in running backs, it's going to be more of the Le'Veon Bell style of running back, mm-hmm. where he can be on the field when you're passing the ball. Like the Adrian Peterson, the guy who's going to run for 4.5 yards a carry, is going to disappear for the most part. Whereas you're going to see guys like Le'Veon Bell, I think Devontae Freeman for the Falcons is just like that. And so I think you're going to see more of these, guys who can run the ball and catch the ball. Those are going to be your, you know, franchise running backs are going to be kind of that style.
I don't even think they'll reach franchise status though, and because they're going to need breather. But it's interesting you point out Devonta, because I think he had the most snaps at running back position last year. I think I read that, and it was less than like 800, right? Whereas Julio Jones, the wide receiver on the team, was more in the like the 900 range. I mean, so it just shows you. And then obviously a quarterback's going to be on there with those kind of numbers, probably in the 1200s, right?
Yeah.
Because he's on the field all the time.
Yeah, he's there for every snap.
Again, I think that it comes down to a business decision that a back like a Bell or a Devonta Freeman, what we used to call your third down back, right, the one that can catch and run, is going to now become the kind of people are drafting. But they're not going to draft him in the first round. They're going to draft him late because of the payout that they're going to get. In the next 4 years, if you spend all that money on a freshman or a rookie running back, the payout in 4 years is going to be way less than what you might get out of a great quarterback or a great lineman or a great receiver. So I just think the importance of the position, it's a business decision as far as efficiency goes. But you'll still have those backs that, like a Freeman or a Bell, that, you know, fantasy lovers love to own, and the team depends on, but it doesn't affect the team's winning, as you were saying. Like, you're not going to win a Super Bowl with a workhorse and only that.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss them. I'm going to miss those running backs, though.
Yeah, I don't know. whenever I played Madden, I always ran the ball like crazy.
Right?
I love those running guys. I was never good at throwing the ball. Which is
probably, well, as a former quarterback that wasn't good at throwing the ball, I ran a lot, so.
Yeah, we had a long talk about that last week, about running quarterbacks, me and Ethan, how they're basically changing the NFL, and really just football in general, not just the NFL.
Yep.
But anyway, so moving on, there was some kind of exciting news involving Utah State, and really all the other college basketball teams in the state. There's going to be what's called the Beehive Classic. And so here's kind of the statement that I copy and pasted off of the UtahStateAggies.com. So it says, the Beehive Classic will feature four teams playing in an annual doubleheader each December from 2017 to 2019. That's three seasons. The schools will rotate opponents in a round-robin format over the 3 years in the soon-to-be-renovated home arena of Utah Jazz in downtown Salt Lake City. So the four teams are Utah State, University of Utah, BYU, and Weber State. You know, basically the four good basketball teams in the state. And
I wonder how UVU feels about that.
I don't know. I don't even know what conference they're in. It's like the Great West Conference. I don't know what they call it. And maybe eventually they can get in, but I think even Weber State's a bit of a stretch, who could probably only compete in some good years. But I think overall, this is a good thing. I like it. You know, there are definitely some positives and negatives involving the tournament, but I think mostly positives. But one thing, so this isn't going to be this season, it's going to be the next season, and Utah State will start off by facing the University of Utah. and then BYU and Weber State will play in the other. And so kind of the positives that I thought is, first off, it allows for kind of a competitive interstate atmosphere. It's a tournament, and, you know, obviously fans of all these schools, you know, sit around the water cooler and say, hey, Beehive Classic, stuff like that. You know, provides the argument who's the best team in the state. Pretty clear cut. You win the tournament, you're probably going to be considered the best team in the state. And so it kind of allows that competitive interstate competition. And I think another big positive is that it's going to allow these rivalries to continue without as much scheduling hassle.
Yeah.
This is going to be, you know, every year, and hopefully they extend it beyond the 3 years. I'm anticipating that it will if it manages to succeed. But, I mean, you see with, they're all in different conferences, and you've got BYU and Utah. You know, when you get in bigger conferences, get better, you tend to get on your high horse about scheduling teams like Utah State and Weber
right.
State,
right.
who aren't quite as high up there. And so you avoid
the fear of losing.
Yeah. And they'll never go to the away arena. You know, they'll say, you got to come to our arena twice before we'll go to yours, you know. And so you're not seeing these scheduling hassles. You know, that benefits Weber State the most, and Utah State probably second as far as that. And so these rivalries get to continue in a good format.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but this is basically a tournament per se, mm-hmm. that lasts for 3 years, essentially.
It's a 1 day event each year.
Right.
Yeah.
But to find out who the best is, they don't play each other all in that sit down. It's a so for instance, like you said, Utah State faces Utah in 2017, and then in 2018. It'll be Utah State versus Weber State, right? So really, we're looking at which team has the best program over the span of a few years.
So what happens is it's a doubleheader game. So this upcoming year, Utah State will play the University of Utah. If they win that game, they'll play the winner of BYU-Weber State that year.
Okay.
Later in the day.
Later, okay.
And so it's a full, on you know, two-game tournament, basically, in 1 day. And that's actually kind of one of the negatives that I thought of. Is that it's a doubleheader. Like, doubleheaders are a baseball thing. I played a doubleheader in basketball, recreational basketball. Yep. And it killed me. You know, I was a teenager, so I'm supposed to have infinite amounts of energy.
Right.
And I was really tired by the end. I didn't care by the fourth quarter. I was like, and we were losing anyway. So I was just so freaking tired. And imagine these guys who work so much harder. They play more minutes. You know, imagine playing almost 80 minutes in a day for some of these, you know, star players. The championship game is going to be a game of, okay, who's less tired? And so I wish they could do a 2 or 3 day span.
Yeah.
And if they can improve it, that would probably be the thing, is to have a game and then, you know, have a day.
Give it a break.
Yeah, day off, and then play the next day. So over the course of 3 days, play the games, and then I think it'd be better. I think so there's two other negatives. The first off is there's not going to be any home games, basically. It's mm-hmm. going to be a neutral site. It's going to be played at the Vivint Arena, whatever they call the Jazz Stadium these days. And so there is kind of a good side to having a neutral site. It's a little more fair, and it's not just going to be, okay, who's home this year? That's the way it was with Utah State and
right.
BYU, is whoever was home won the game.
Right.
And so this year, you're getting a little more even. You're going to see about the same amount of fans, roughly speaking. But still, home games are a fun thing, especially for rivalry games.
And luckily, the site, I think, is a good choice. I mean, that's where we used to do the neutral site with BYU, is when we could make it work. But I agree with you. It's... I think part of college basketball is the arena, right? Like, that's what sometimes makes it. And I think the Spectrum used to be that way.
Yeah.
Back when I was in school, right? and so having that element taken away, I think, will make the games feel less important.
Yeah.
But I think that it has the potential to... I think you'll see a lot of fans making the effort to get there.
Yeah.
Because it is the whole rivalry thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a whole lot of people will show up for Utah State to play Weber State down, you know, at
It'll probably be mostly Utah State.
And I don't think a whole... But when we play BYU down there, I think you'll see fans get hyped to show up, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
I think that you're right in that certain games are going to lack that element. But over the years, it has the potential to become kind of this big deal, right?
Yeah, if it kind of gets ingrained as a tradition, then yeah, it could be a big thing.
But I'm glad that they all sat down and finally picked a way to hash it out. Like you said, scheduling-wise, it just almost became impossible for a lot of these teams. So I'm glad that, I guess it's probably Larry H. Miller Sports Entertainment that decided to throw this together. So
yeah, I think that's who it was.
Cool.
Yeah. Pretty awesome stuff. What do you think the odds of Utah State competing in that tournament are every year?
I think that it's always good. I think Utah college basketball is always a toss-up. I hope that Utah State's program continues to build and get better for the sake of everybody. And I think it might take them a while, but there's a certain thing about playing in those kind of games that as a player you just you perform better.
Rise to the occasion.
Yeah, and I think that's where what you're talking about. Having fans to be able to there and get along in there with it, I think that'd be pretty great. But I think it'll take us a while. I think we can pull off a win here and there. I don't think we'll be considered the favorites by any means in the next couple of years. But
yeah. Utah State can get some good players. They got like a 4-star recruit this year. So we're on our way. All right. So the next thing kind of want to talk about. So I'm a big Real Salt Lake fan, and I don't know how much you watch Real Salt Lake. Recently, they've been going through some real struggles. They're on a 6-game winless streak. They've had 4 draws, 2 losses. And so the last 2 games I've watched, I feel like are representing kind of what's happening. I was there last Friday, this past Friday, when they played San Jose, and they tied 1-1 draw.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched them play the Seattle Sounders. Sounders. I almost said Sonics.
I wish.
Yeah.
I wish the Sonics would come back.
Yeah. And they lost to the Sounders. It was an Open Cup, the U.S. Open Cup match, and they lost in penalties after they had a 0-0 draw all through everything, extra time and whatnot. Then they lose in penalties. And as I watched both those games, RSL absolutely dominated in those games. They had possession forever. Whenever they lost the ball, they'd get it back in about a minute or 30 seconds or just really quickly. And so they had almost no problem getting possession, getting passes, getting into the final third of the field. They couldn't score.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in those 2 games I'm talking about, they had 1 goal. And they had a lot of chances, or sometimes they couldn't create enough chances for how much possession they had. And if you look over these past 6 games, they have 3 goals. I think one of them was a penalty kick.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got 2 goals in the run of play over 6 games. Now, that's not exactly impressive. And as I was looking through the stats, RSL isn't really low on a list of number of goals scored. They're like, I can't remember, they've got like 30 goals, and the highest is like 35 or 36 in the league. And so they're not far behind the leading scorers, it's just they haven't been able to score recently.
Yeah.
And so I'm not entirely sure what's going wrong. I mean, I just feel like watching them, they're not able to create chances. They're trying to get it into the box and just get it on the feet of either Joao Plata or Burrito Martinez. And it's hard to get a shot off from inside the box by just passing it on the ground into a guy and him kicking it. That typically doesn't happen.
Right. I mean, even in the game you referenced, against the Earthquakes, it was a sweet goal.
Yeah.
That Morales just flipped over and went right to the foot of Mulholland, right?
Yeah.
That was a sweet goal, and it's like what you're talking about. They didn't try to force that. It was actually just really good passing and I don't know what's up with them. You know, they've said that they feel like the net has been shrinking on them. What's super interesting to me is that a lot of those games that we're talking about, you know, with the four draws, the two losses, have been at home, right? They've been at home, I think, five of them or so.
Yeah, they've had a lot of home games.
And that's where I'm like, come on, man. Like, you just talked about home field, right? So, I believe it's a contract year for head coach.
I think some fans are starting to get upset with Jeff Cassar. I mean, everybody seemed to love Jason Kreis. His system was working, and now I guess Cassar is getting on the hot seat.
Yeah, and I think that he came out in a recent interview and said, like, hey, we just got to win if I want to get my extension. And so he gets it, right? He understands that they're going through a thing here. But are they currently in fourth place in the Western Conference?
Oh, I saw it. They're something like fourth or fifth or something that they shouldn't be at. They should be higher.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been dropping because they've gotten, you know, 4 points out of six games.
Yeah, they're not getting the 3-point games that they need.
Yeah.
But the problem with being in the West is that it's always close, right? You're going to have Portland on your heels. You're going to have Vancouver on your heels. You're going to have...
There's always that late season run by the Galaxy, you know.
Yeah. Sporting Kansas City will decide to show up or something like that towards the end. Yeah, so there's little margin for error, I guess, and they're doing it.
Yeah.
Last year, I think, was the first time they missed the playoffs, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that was a game where I think they had, like, the lowest amount of goals. I think they were one of the worst in the league, where they just couldn't score at all.
Yeah.
And I think that was when they brought in Yuri Movsisian. They brought in Rudy Martinez, and that helped supplement, you know, Joao Plata and Javier Morales and all those guys. And so they brought in several guys to hopefully improve their offense, which up until these last six games, they'd been able to do fairly well.
I think they just brought up a guy from Venezuela just in the last day or two as well. I think he's a 19-year-old.
Yeah, I think I saw him.
I don't know if they plan on using him immediately or just kind of putting him into the system or not. Yeah. But
they had to pull some guys because, and this is, I found this really interesting. So, Sunday Steven, I call him Sunny, he's been out these last six games. He's been injured, and I found that an eerie coincidence. And I looked a little into it, and again, I'm not saying that he's the reason that they've lost because, I mean, he's had like one goal and one assist, but it is oddly coincidental. I just kind of looked into it playfully and thought, okay, when he starts, they're 7-4-3. When he plays all 40 minutes, they're 4-0-1. And when he plays at least 80 minutes, they're 6-1-1. So it's like, coincidence. Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. They have a really good record when he plays. But, again, maybe he's what they need.
He's injured.
Yeah, he's injured. They said he's going to be out 6 weeks, and they said that, like, June 24th. So we're about a little over halfway through the minimum timetable. It could be more than that. But, I mean, I have nothing against Luke Mulholland, who I think is the one they've been starting in his spot. I mean, he's a good player. He's an offensive player.
Yeah.
So you'd think they'd be scoring more. With him on the field. And I thought he played really well in that San Jose game. And obviously he had the goal. But it was more than just his goal that he was doing really well at.
And it's like you said, it's not like they're getting dominated in these games.
Yeah.
They're controlling the ball for the most part. They just can't get it in the net.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that is the one thing is that the possession, I had the stat down here somewhere. They, overall through these last six games, they've had a 54.7 to 45.3 possession advantage. And in the draws, it's like 60-40. And so, yeah, I guess it proves that possession isn't quite
the problem.
Yeah.
Just getting into the net.
Yeah. Finish it.
Yeah. Well, it's good because they started off hot. I mean, I think they went 6-4 with a draw or two in there.
Yeah, they had like a 6 or 7 unbeaten streak
to
start the season.
And unfortunately, that doesn't help when it's time to peak, right? So now that we're coming towards, like I said, there's a little margin for error there. They need to start kind of having that kind of a streak again rather than going the opposite way. So.
Yeah. Mm. These kind of streaks happen for teams. Just hopefully they can manage to get out of it because, I mean, they've got three good offensive players as their forwards. In the 4-3-3, they've got Plata, Movsisian, and Martinez. They're three good goal scorers. All of them have like five or more goals. They're scoring well. They have good scores.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not in form right now.
I mean, their leading scorer right now, do you know who that is?
It's Movsisian. He has like 7 or 8 goals, I think.
Okay.
So. And then it's like Martinez and then Plata. Plata started off really good because in like the first, that unbeaten streak, he had like 4 goals and 4 assists. Then he got injured for a few games and now he's only scored like 1 goal. Although I think he has like 3 assists.
So is this just injuries that are causing this? That
I don't really think so. They haven't had a whole lot of major injuries. Like Sunday Steven is like the only major injury they've had. Everyone else has pretty much been there. Kyle Beckerman had a stint with the U.S. national team,
right,
so he was missing games. But other than that, I think one thing that has had an impact on the season is to begin the season, Arsenal had a lot of buys. They were way behind in games played. And then all of a sudden, this past month and a half, they've just been jam-packed. Like, you know, spread them out in the beginning of the season, cram them all together in the middle of the season. It's like, okay, this isn't fair. When you're playing 3 games in a week and a half,
Yeah. They've
had to rest players. Like, for a while, I was kind of thinking, okay, is this the game where they play their starters or rest them? Because the first loss in the 6-game winless streak was to FC Dallas, where they didn't play their starters. You know, they just sent in all their backups.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the schedule here. I think that definitely has had an impact. They've been cramming a lot in. 2-3 games a week.
Yeah, and you got Open Cup games too, where that always throws everything off. And so, and I don't know. We'll see if Real Salt Lake can come back from this. But, you know, obviously, they're still in the playoff hunt to be in the playoffs. And as long as they stay healthy and can manage to get form, they've got a chance to contend.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a schedule coming up, a little bit of a road trip here. They'll be Philadelphia Sunday. Toronto a few days after that, and then back home, and then they'll head up to Seattle. So schedule looks like they could maybe, it's not as packed, it looks like, but there's a lot of games that they're dealing with here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think they'll do? You think this will be a time they can turn around on this little road trip to Philly and Toronto?
That doesn't sound like the easiest schedule,
right.
But I mean, they're still a good team and on the road, you know, maybe they can do something. If they can just have a game where the offense just lets loose and they get 2, 3, maybe even 4 goals and these guys can get some confidence,
yeah,
then that'd be great. Well, I do worry that Yermán Susan, because he left the San Jose game injured before the end of the first half. I was watching the game. It looked like he pulled something in his groin or something, because he reached out for a ball with his leg and then he started limping. So, well, I haven't read anything that says he's out, but I wonder. But still, if the strikers can just get some confidence, then maybe they can make a run of these teams. Because they're a good team with a good defense, and they just need to get the offense rolling.
Yeah, I think that's the key there, is they got to just have just one game where they just get, you know, 3 or 4 goals. Just dust it off and get going. So,
and that's something that for the beginning of the season I was wondering, is like they hadn't had a game with 3 goals.
Mm-hmm.
That's something, you know what, obviously you don't need to score 3 goals every game, but then they had a run, I was just looking at the schedule, they had a run where they had several games with 3 goals or so, like against Columbus, they lost that game 4-3, but they also had Sporting Kansas City, and there's one other game where they scored 3 goals, but they've had games where they've scored.
But just not recently.
Yeah, just not recently, and they haven't had that many this season. But anyway, moving on. I want to get to this before we run out of time. So this deals with the Utah Jazz. A lot of the anticipation for the Utah Jazz season surrounds, you know, the fact they've signed several good, solid veteran players, George Hill and Joe Johnson and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you still got Gordon Hayward and Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, you get Dante Exum back. There's just a lot of things to be excited about. But something that's kind of going under the radar, and perhaps rightfully so, you have Trey Lyles, who was the Jazz's number first-round draft pick. He was selected number 12 overall in last year's draft. Mm-hmm. Not this one, but the last year. And he had a much better rookie season than I think a lot of people expected. Because when he was in college, he was Kentucky he played for, he didn't really impress a whole lot of people. And that's one of the reasons he fell, is because, you know, when playing in Kentucky, there's going to be good players around you.
Right.
And so he wasn't able to shine. And then with the Jazz, I mean, he only played like 17 minutes per game. He was a rookie. But he was able to exceed expectations. He played fairly well. People were impressed with how well he was able to shoot the basketball. I mean, he shot like, what was it, like 38% from three. Really good. And he helped add an element for the Jazz didn't have, that being three-point shooting. And he was able to stretch the floor, which is something that's crucial in the NBA nowadays. I mean, the Jazz seem like an old-school team because they play two actual big men. And so it's interesting because Trey Lyles is, you know, obviously doing a lot better. He could develop into something good. He turned 20 like a few games into his rookie season. So he'll turn 21 early in this upcoming season. So you've got a really young guy.
Yeah. His birthday is in November, so yeah.
Yeah. And so you think, how good can he be? What's his ceiling? I mean, in the summer league, he was really the only player that, that a lot of people, I think, were really interested in watching. Because the rest of the league, I mean, Utah State guys, we saw Spencer Butterfield on the list, and we were like, woo!
Yeah, he did well.
Yeah, he did well, and I think, unfortunately, he didn't make enough of an impression to make the NBA. But yeah. I think overall, I mean, the roster was full of those kind of guys who they're trying to make an NBA spot, but didn't really. But Trey Lyles, it was interesting because I listened to an interview that Quinn Snyder did, and he talked about Trey Lyles, about how he was going to be the focal point of this offense. And this was really Trey Lyles' time to shine. It was his time to just do whatever he wanted, be the leader of the team, which he didn't get a chance to do that in college, and mm-hmm. obviously not in the NBA. Not yet, at least. And in the summer league, he really impressed a lot of people. You look at his stats, and he played in only five games, like five of the nine games the Jazz played.
Right.
But he averaged 23.8 points a game. Was it 9 rebounds a game? And so he shot 47% from three. And so he did really well. I mean, his overall field goal percentage was actually pretty low. It was at like 39%. But the fact that he was leading the team, taking all the shots, I think there was a stat I was looking up. He scored like almost a third of the Jazz's points.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And you look at some of the other big names in the summer league, you know, the Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram. They scored like 13, 14% of their team's points. So Trey Lyles was basically the offense for the Utah Jazz in these games.
Yep.
And so obviously he kind of proved that, okay, I can, you know, carry this team. You know, obviously the shooting percentages have to come up, but, you know, Gordon Hayward went through that kind of spell when he had to carry a team. And it kind of makes me wonder, and I've kind of had these thoughts when people were just throwing on the praise for Trey Lyles, is there a point where he becomes good enough that Derek Favors becomes expendable?
Mm.
And my initial thought is, probably not. And I think if there is a point, it's when Trey Lyles becomes good enough on defense to be able to, you know, make up for losing the defensive presence of Derek Favors. And he'll never be as good as Derek Favors on defense, because I don't think so. Because Derek Favors is a defensive monster.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, Trey Lyles is bringing more to the table offensively as far as, you know, ability to stretch the floor, you know, give Rudy Gobert some more space inside to actually try and do something on offense. And, you know, Derek Favors is slowly being able to, you know, shoot longer and longer shots. But, you know, Trey Lyles already has that. He's only going to get better, theoretically.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're seeing, the Jazz did a really good job, and I applaud the coaching staff for using Summer League for what it's for. I mean, it's to develop your players, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people get up on the hype of who's going to make the team.
Yeah.
But really what they're trying to do here is develop players like Lyles and Page and Wallace and some of those other kind of recent picks.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a guy that came out of Kentucky basketball, left as a freshman. So he hasn't really had the chance to develop like we talked about. And I think he definitely did that in Summer League. When you start becoming too good for Summer League, you know that you've kind of started to develop. But they challenged him and they put him in situations that, like, he's never been in before. Like you said, mm-hmm. he had to lead the team. He had to be the one scoring. And I think that they did develop him. I think Coach Snyder talked specifically about how they wanted to challenge him and put him in situations he hasn't been in, and that they did that this summer. So I think that they're investing in their future, and hopefully it's going to be a payoff, and maybe he does, you know, replace a Favors here in the next little while.
Yeah, it just makes you think. And if Favors happens to leave in free agency or trade or whatever, I guess Trail is just an insurance policy at this point, and possibly a usurper. Only time will tell.
Only time will tell.
But I think it is exciting. I am super excited for the Utah Jazz season. It's going to be the best season in a while, although everybody's saying that, and it's probably...
They'll probably
be decimated by injuries again.
As someone who stopped caring about the Utah Jazz years ago, I hope it becomes something to get involved with.
Yeah. And I hope Gordon Hayward stays.
Yeah, well...
Maybe.
He's been the face for a while.
Yeah. All right.
Well, it's been fun.
Yeah, it has.
I like it. This is show number 2, right?
Yeah, show number 2. I'm getting my feet under me now. We'll see how it goes from here.
Well, thanks for letting me hang out with you.
Thank you for
an hour or so. You'll be back next week, next Tuesday?
Yep, next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday at 9.
Yep. We might talk about what happened at Mountain West Media Days, since now I actually care.
Since you now know what those things are.
All right. Well, anyway, thanks everyone for listening. If you want to tweet me or anything, your opinions on stuff we talked about, it's at @thejaywalk67. So go ahead and send me a tweet if you have an opinion on the stuff we talked about. And Nate, what's your Twitter?
I'm @SkippyNate. So that's SkippyN8. You may know me from 90s at 9, which you took over on Tuesdays.
Sorry about that.
Oh, I'm happy to give it to you. It's a good show, but thanks for letting me get back on the mic today. And @SkippyNate here on Aggie Radio.
Yep.
92.3 KBLU Logan. I hope everyone had a good Pioneer Day, and now it's back to work, unfortunately.
Yep, unfortunately.
Well, we're gonna throw it out to a song then, and say thanks for listening.
I felt the music and it spoke messages. No precedence, nothing even coming close next to this. My whole body and soul was soaked right to the bottom of both testicles. So sexual, get you to open sesame. Penetration, the sound connected like soy lecithin. Let's begin. Full